from chapter 5.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Idam hipumsa tapasa srutasya vasvatasya suktasya cha bodhi tattayoh avinchatortha kavibhir nirupito yat uttama shloka Runana Varnanam.
We have second book. I'll just chant it a couple times through. Hearing the sound is nice.
Idam hi pungsas tapasas srutasya vas srishtasya suktasya jabodhi dattayoho Avinja torta kavibir nirupito yad uttama shloka gunana varnanam idam hi pungsas tapasa srutasya va srishtasya suktasya cha bodhi dattayoh avinja torta kavibir nirupito yadutama shloka gunana varnanam.
Learned circles have positively concluded that the infallible purpose of the achievement of knowledge, namely austerity, study of the Vedas, sacrifice, chanting of hymns and charity, culminates in the transcendental descriptions of the Lord, who is defined in choice poetry. Report by Srila Prabhupada. Human intellect is developed for advancement of learning in art, science, philosophy, physics, chemistry, psychology, economics, politics, etc. By culture of such knowledge, the human society can attain the perfection of life. This perfection of life culminates in the realization of the Supreme Being, Vishnu. The Shruti, therefore, directs that those who are actually advanced in learning should aspire for the service of Lord Vishnu. Unfortunately, persons who are enamored by the external beauty of Vishnu Maya do not understand that culmination of perfection of self-realization depends on Vishnu. Vishnu Maya means sense enjoyment, which is transient and miserable. Those who are entrapped by Vishnu Maya utilize advancement of knowledge for sense enjoyment. Sri Narada Muni has explained. Now, Sri Narada Muni is the one who's speaking. He's speaking to his disciple, Vyas. And so that's the context. And he's said many things. This fifth chapter is his instructions to him about composing Srimad Bhagavatam, so he's telling him what kind of literature Srimad Bhagavatam should be, why he should write it, what things should be there, what things should not be there, what's the focus of this literature that he wants him to write. Sri Narada Muni has explained that all paraphernalia of the cosmic universe is but an emanation from the Lord out of his different energies, because the Lord has set in motion by his inconceivable energy the actions and reactions of the created manifestation. have come to be out of his energy. They rest on his energy, and after annihilation they merge into him. Nothing is therefore different from him, but at the same time the Lord is always different from them. We'll go over it. I'll say it to you like that one. This is all emanations, all cosmic paraphernalia have come out of his energy. They rest on his energy, and after annihilation they merge into him. Nothing is therefore different from him. But at the same time, the Lord is always different from them. This is 9th chapter, first few verses, 3, 4, and 5. This is the philosophy behind the utilization of all things. The Chintaveda Veda Tattva philosophy justifies devotional service. And it repudiates impersonalism or false renunciation. Welcome back. When advancement of knowledge is applied in the service of the Lord, the whole process becomes absolute. The personality of Godhead and his transcendental name, fame, glory, etc. are all non-different from him. Therefore, all the sages and devotees of the Lord have recommended that the subject matter of art, science, philosophy, physics, chemistry, psychology, and all other branches of knowledge should be wholly and solely applied in the service of the Lord. Again, another inventory list. Art, literature, poetry, painting, etc. may be used in glorifying the Lord. The fiction writers, poets, and celebrated literateurs are generally engaged in writing sensuous subjects, but if they turn towards the service of the Lord, they can describe the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. Valmiki was a great poet, and similarly Vyasadeva is a great writer. He's being spoken to here. And both of them have absolutely engaged themselves in delineating the transcendental activities of the Lord. And by so doing have become immortal. Similarly, science and philosophy and information technology should also be applied in the service of the Lord. There is no use presenting dry, speculative theories about forced sense gratification. Philosophy and science should be engaged to establish the glory of the Lord. Advanced people are eager to understand the absolute truth through the medium of science. And therefore, a great scientist should endeavor to prove the existence of the Lord on a scientific basis. Similarly, philosophical speculations should be utilized to establish the supreme truth as sentient and all-powerful. Similarly, all other branches of knowledge, including information technology, should always be engaged in the service of the Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita also, the same is affirmed. All, quote, knowledge not engaged in the service of the Lord is but nescience. Real utilization of advanced knowledge is to establish the glories of the Lord. And that is the real import. scientific knowledge, engaged in the service of the Lord, and all similar activities are all factually Hari Kirtan, or glorification of the Lord. Idam hi pumsas tapasa srutasyava srishtasya suktasya chabodhi dakkayoho avinchutorta kavibir nirupito yad utama shoka gunanu varnanam. Learned circles have positively concluded that the infallible purpose of the advancement of knowledge, namely austerities, study of the Veda, sacrifice, charity, and chanting of hymns and charity, culminates in the transcendental descriptions of the Lord, who is defined in choice poetry. Ananjana Sarataya Chakshura Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manomusham Stapitam Neda Mutare Svayam Rupa Pradamayam Pradati Svayam. Sequencing here is these early chapters of the first canto are defining the subject of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam in a summary way in the first three chapters by questions and answers, and now in the next three chapters by this describing the event of the Bhagavatam being written with the instructions of Narada, what the subject of the Bhagavatam is to be and what distinguishes the Bhagavatam from other portions of Vedic literature. What is this literature? What is the unique and distinguishing qualities of it? The dynamic of these 4, 5, and 6, these chapters, is very clearly setting Srimad Bhagavatam in a unique position, in a superlative position. While not meaning the rest of the Vedas, or minimizing the rest of the Vedas, the purpose as Prabhupada is indicating in the purport, the difference between nescience and knowledge, or the difference between a thing that is properly applied and a thing that is applied without full consciousness of the Supreme, which means improperly applied. And the outcome of those two things is very, very different. Like the simple example that Prabhupada gives in Bhagavad Gita of two factory workers. It's a very graphic example because factory workers in an assembly line, they're doing the same thing. Same thing. It's not to get the product, it's the same thing. But one is in spiritual consciousness, the other is in material consciousness. So the consciousness behind the activity is the critical factor. And in terms of more subtle activity, not a factory assembly line, but the application of knowledge, the consciousness behind the process of knowledge. So when we hear knowledge in a Western context, that often means the vast institutions of education. And then what happens on the other end of that vast institution of education, that's the application of that trained knowledge, which in our modern context has become, you know, the corporate world, the world of professionalism and technology and so forth. And for that matter, the big hand of the corporate world has reached its way very stealthily into the educational arena, and the educational arena has just become an extension of the corporate world. People getting tuitions paid for because they're going to do the research at a lesser pay than the person who's graduated and not in the working field. But in both cases, the way it was, a little distinction, the way that it was previously, where education was valued, and now it's something else is valued. The money that can come from the corporate world is valued. Both are in the position of nescience as long as the purpose behind whatever field of knowledge is, as long as it's not accomplished, it's not at the focal point and factually accomplished. Take it even, you know, notch it up several notches, and it's the whole of the study of the Vedas. The study of the Vedas remains on the material platform if it doesn't bring about the attraction for the message of the personality of Godhead. Notpadiyadhyadi ratim shramayadhi kevala rati. If the attraction, attachment for the personality of Godhead and the Vasudeva Kata Ruchi, the topic of Krishna, Shrama Eva He Kevala. The Prabhupada, there's certain something about the composition of the Bhagavatam and Prabhupada's style of speaking. Just briefly, there are theme messages in the Bhagavatam, and something that I appreciate from studying the Bhagavatam is those theme messages repeat themselves in little clusters of syllables, and those theme messages, just by uttering those syllables, it brings the whole message. And from describing it this way and describing it that way, but centering it on those key expressions, then it brings out the whole subject, like little sutra-like statements that contain essences, and within the essence, just chew on the essence and the flavor comes. So when Prabhupada spoke on this verse or would just refer to this verse, he would refer to the last line of the verse, Yadutumashpoka Gunada Varnanam, Yadutumashpoka Gunada Varnanam, Utumashpoka Gunada Varnanam, again and again. And it meant a whole thing, just that phrase. I'm not so familiar with the rest of the verse. I'm certainly familiar just from hearing Prabhupada speaking. It's a principle. Of course, the name of Krishna is there, Uttama Shloka. So that's all auspicious, even if you don't know the principle. But the principle is that intellectual endeavor the use of the finer faculties of the human form of life, thought and reason, and the sophistications of it. close the door, would you, please? The sophistications of modern society is meant utamashloko punano varnanam. It's meant for describing when it's properly applied, when it's going to be uplifting and therapeutic of the problems of existing in the material atmosphere. If the personality of Godhead is focused upon and glorified by those sophistications, whatever those things are. And then three times in the purport there's lists, and then there's examples of from that list: art, poetry, music, science, chemistry, physics, philosophy. It's a principle we're meant to understand, and understandings we're meant to apply. So the lesser part of the whole situation, the easier part, is to understand what's being said. The harder part, the application part. What is the use of you sit right by the door, it might be hard for somebody to get in and out. If we don't apply, we're not going to get realization. We'll, at using Prabhupada's phrase, we'll hover on the mental sphere. And spiritual life, Krishna consciousness, is not for hovering on the mental sphere, mental plane. It's meant for realization of our eternal relation with the personality of God, and self-realization, God-realization. So, application. Making sure one has a very clear understanding of a concept, and then practice, cultivate, applying. So, in very kindly, Prabhupada gives us the Achintya Veda Veda type of philosophy behind the concept, so we can really be sure we've got the concept right, have a spiritual conception of things of this world. In short, very short, the spiritual conception is Krishna is the source of everything. Whatever falls in the category of everything, Krishna is the source of that everything, and therefore there's an inseparable connection between everything and Krishna. While at the same time, Krishna, being the source, has his own identity. So in other words, the concept is not a pantheistic concept. The pantheistic concept is nature is God. Someone was trying to give you this argument. I mean, argument, but they were pondering over, you know, can we say that this glass is God? We can say that it's inseparably part of God. But we can't say it's God. It's not the source of everything and everything rests upon it. You can't say that. So there's a oneness and difference simultaneously. That's the philosophical, that's the existential reality of things. That's how it is. And then, now, take that concept, and now what do we do with it? How do we live with it in practical ways with that concept? Very simple. Each thing, because it has its inseparable connection with its source, Krishna, we utilize that thing. So it's one part of it is, if we want to use physical objects, we actually have to get down to the more difficult, in God's service, we have to get down to the, and not use it in name only, but actually in the consciousness of sense gratification. We have to get down to the more subtle things. Here, that's being expressed as the fruits of intelligence. Intelligence drives the mind, and mind drives matter, and matter, excuse me, yeah. Intelligence drives the mind, and mind drives the senses, and the senses drive matter. So the intellect has to, we have to have the right spiritual conception. And then it becomes 1, 2, 3. It just follows that physical objects get used in service of the Lord. If we don't have a spiritual conception, then we have this tussle. It's called being on the mental platform. Sometimes I feel like this, and sometimes I feel like that. And depending upon how I feel, that's how I behave. That's how I speak. That's how I think. That's how I live. So these analogy you've heard me use many times, because Prabhupada used it, the parallel tracks of the train. There must be something that purifies our consciousness. There must be standard knowledge. And both are needed side by side. Haridas Thakur describes that if one wants to perfect one's life in chanting the holy name, proper sambandha again must be there. We have to understand what's what. There's things that have a relationship with God. And then there's my consciousness that needs to be in harmony with God. And then I can act on things in the right consciousness. And especially for those who are endowed with a little bit of intellect capacity. And that's everybody assembled here, some amount of intellect capacity. How is that capacity, which is one of the things that comes from God, which, you know, proof of that is it can be taken away, just like physical objects, or any capacity we have, just like that, it's gone. So it's not our property, someone else's. Now we have this property that's somebody else's. How do we properly use it? Here's the instruction. You use it in such a way that the personality of Godhead is glorified. The previous verse, Narada is speaking to his disciple, Vyas. He's honoring his disciple as an incarnation of the Lord. Imagine being a spiritual master, an incarnation of the Lord. But that's the situation that's set up. You yourself can know the super soul personality of Godhead because you are present as a plenary portion of the Lord. He knows his qualifications. Although you are birthless, you have appeared on this earth for the well-being of all people. Now he gives his instruction. Please, therefore, describe the transcendental pastimes of the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, more vividly. That's what the Bhagavatam is. It's in contrast to the rest of the Vedas, which he's already said, largely describe how to do duties in such a way that one can fulfill desires. Nicely. Motive goodness. Fulfill desires. Through this sacrifice, through this austerity, through this ritual, and these different procedures, and these duties, and these ways of living, your desires can be nicely fulfilled. But what's the purpose, what's the deeper and ultimate purpose? It's there, but you have not sufficiently and singularly focused upon that. Now compose this literature that does that. That's the Srimad Bhagavatam. He's instructing him on what is the Srimad Bhagavatam, or telling us what is the Srimad Bhagavatam, and he's instructing him, you're a literary person. What you've written is flawless. I'm not saying it's that you've erred in what you've written, but too much. An inordinate amount of emphasizing how to satisfy material desires. So it's now, instead of pravritti, it's nivritti. Decreasing material involvement and increasing focus and testing of consciousness upon the personality of Godhead. And if in this in-between phase, the verse starts, idam. Idam is a pronoun. This, that this is referring to the glorification of the personality of Godhead, his transcendental pastimes, topics of relation to him, more vividly described. This, now he's connecting that, you know, perfection of use of literary skill to things that are more in this world. Hidam hi pungsas tapasa shrutasya va svistasya suktasya cha bodhi tatayo. The infallible purpose of advancement of knowledge, namely austerity, study of the Vedas, sacrifice, chanting of hymns, charity, high grade activities. They'll stay on the material platform, Vyas, unless this higher thing is there, unless they're coupled with it. So do this, connect these things with this. That's the message. It culminates in the transcendental descriptions of the Lord who is defined in choice poetry. So each one of us, not just you, myself too, each one of us has some gift that Krishna has given. We need to conscientiously, carefully consider how that gift should be used in service to the Supreme Lord, culminating in that accomplishment. That's a challenge. That's a nice challenge. Better than not having that capacity and lamenting that we don't have the capacity. That capacity is there, use it. Otherwise, you know what's going to happen? We all know what's going to happen. It'll be taken away. That's what happens. You don't utilize something properly, Krishna will take it away. That's not what we want. We want to enjoy. And that's a facility for enjoyment. And that's the nescience platform. To utilize things that have been given for our enjoyment. That's the nescience platform. Utilize something that we've been given to elevate our consciousness, specifically to the point of connecting with the Supreme Personality and Godhead, and glorifying Him through that gift which we have been given. As responsible. That's the purpose behind the gift. And it's, you know, back to this Achintya Veda Veda Tattva teaching. That's the philosophical underpinning that scripturally supports doing that act of taking this intellectual faculty of various forms of it, or some ability in various forms of it, and connecting it. Now, Prabhupada specifically, in one of his lists, mentions fiction writers, poets, and celebrated literateurs are generally engaged in writing sensuous subjects. They're engaged in writing sensuous subjects because that's where their mind is at, and also that's what's marketable. How is it that they can have these huge budgets for these modern movies? Because there's a market for it. And they spend gobs and gobs and promote it and have da-da-da-da-da-da things that go along with it besides the movie. Because there's a market for it. And that's something that Prabhupada addresses also in this canto. Things have deteriorated because the motive of the persons who are doing things is what's marketable. And because people have an appetite for sensuous things, just feed them the appetite, let them go to hell and take their money and enjoy. It's prostitution. It's exploitation of that gift that Krishna has given to drag society down. And there's so many problems that come from violence and crime and sex and things that are all over the place. Although the market doesn't stop, the problems get bigger and bigger. And it's, you know, you can't walk on the street because who knows, somebody that's... I'll just share this with you. Just a little anecdote. One of our devotees, Lakshmi Nisringa, for some time after he was temple president for years and years, became married and had a small son, and he had to have some employment, so he did what he was doing before he became a devotee. He was an English teacher. He was a teacher of English literature. So we went back and began teaching English literature in a Catholic school in New Jersey. And he's really good with people. So one of the things that he did with the kids was he was going to have them write an essay, and to have them think more deeply about what essay they were going to write, they had to, he requested them to report to the class. And he went around the room, what do you think that you'd like to write about? Kind of like, you know, get them into the mood. So one of the kids said, I want to write a book, I want to write an essay about killing my father. Mm-hmm. And Lakshmi said, oh really? Why would you want to do that? He said, I hate my father. He said, well, don't you see any consequences for killing your father? Yeah. And what? If I get caught, then I'm in trouble. So, but I'll tell you, you know, if I could do it, I'd do it. Just right in the class. You know, he's mean. I don't like him. And I forget exactly how it came out, but he said, you know, Lakshmi asked an ethical question. You know, do you feel that's okay? That I've seen on television hundreds and thousands of murders. It doesn't mean anything to me. I don't feel anything. If I do it, if I could get away with it, I'd do it. That was, you know, a comment about writing an essay for an English literature class in a parochial school in Paterson, New Jersey. A good school. People that had to pay extra to send their kid to a parochial school. And it's not the parochial school didn't pollute it, it was the media that polluted it. But, you know, doesn't take a lot to figure it out. Why the increase of violence? Because people are seeing it again and again and again. Why do people see it? Because they want to see it, and people produce it. Spend lots of money, use their talent to put that stuff in front of people. So, on the other hand, the use of writing ability, I'll give two examples, rather contemporary examples. Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes in the Bhagavat, its ontology, morphology, and something else-ology, I forget what the other one is. He describes that great literature, classic literature of any culture, generally, or it doesn't even use the word generally, it comes from as a reprocessed, modernized version or application of the scriptural teachings that are prevalent in that culture. He gives us the example, Milton's Paradise Lost and Paradise Regained. So it's basically a retelling of, in a contemporary, at that time, contemporary manner, the idea of the fall and regaining paradise. And gives some other examples. So he himself utilized the same principle in his very wonderful book called Jiva Dharma. It's a fiction. It's the story of a contemporary person of his times, living in Calcutta, of just going along with mundane life, and he and his friend hear about the sadhus that live, mahasayas that live in Navadweep, and so they decide to go visit, and they have these visits, and in the course of these series of these visits, they have different discussions, and basically he's in that context, he's explaining the whole of Nectar Devotion, chapter by chapter. If you know Nectar Devotion, follow Jiva Dharma, it's explaining in a contemporary way, chapter by chapter. And then the Dasamula, the 10 essential teachings of Lord Chaitanya. He's presenting the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, but then he weaves in the whole dynamic of the young boy becomes very excited, he wants to go and live with in the ashram, but then his parents get the idea, uh-oh, he's getting too spiritually interested, you better get him married. And then he talks to his friend, you know, I don't know if I want to do this, and his parents are heading him out, and he goes and asks the Mahasaya what to do, I want to just join the ashram, and he says, he gives it, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, through that Mahasaya gives this explanation that you should get married, and here's the reasons why, but also presents the exceptions that I can understand from your nature, your character. This is something you should do, and so he just follows the instruction. So there's all the contemporary stuff, but it's just giving scriptural teachings. Or another example is Tamal Krishna Maharaj wrote a book about a Chinese. It was written actually for the people in China, because the people in China want to come to America. So this Chinese fictional person comes to America, lives in Chinatown, gets spun out by New York City, and, you know, cheated and robbed and, you know, treated like anybody else that comes to New York City. And then he meets devotees and he starts this process of finding out about bhakti, and has his questions with the person, and becomes a practitioner of bhakti yoga, and all of the material aspirations that he had, his reasons for coming fade. And so it was written for the people in China, but it gives a very clear, through the dialogue and experiential form, what the experience is like and the teachings of spiritual life through question and answer. And, you know, so it's a technique that persons that have literary skill can use to accomplish this yad uta vishvaku gunana varnanam. At least, in principle, aspiring to use whatever the faculties, besides literary faculties, whatever faculties one has. And then it becomes spiritualized. And then the default position is, if we're not endeavoring in that way, this phrase that he's using here is Vishnu Maya, one is in the realm of Vishnu Maya, which is means, sense enjoyment, which is transient and miserable. Just like the verse last night in the seventh chapter, Antavattu palam tesham. The temporary nature of the fruits that are delivered through demigod worship. And so we also have to be wary. We may not be demigod worshippers, but aspiring, our aspirations have to move to the eternal. And then with that consciousness behind what we do, then we can, the senses come in contact with matter, the objects of the senses, and as we sift those objects through our senses, if the consciousness behind is, how can the Supreme Lord be glorified? How can he be served? How can he be worshipped? How can our consciousness of him be awakened more strongly through this activity? That's what happens. That is the result that happens, and the default position is one becomes bewildered. And the material civilization that we're surrounded by is that kind of civilization. Advancement of knowledge is revered. There's plenty of institutions and plenty of encouragement and incentives to get into that program. And it's a great bastion of nescience. We know from Isha Upanishad, there's two different results. Vidya and Vidya. And this is the dividing measure from the Bhagavatam is the glorification of the personality of Godhead, the conscious purpose behind the activity. And looking in the society that we're surrounded by, that's not. Even if lip service is there, it's not. And we should also be careful ourselves to not do the lip service part and not be in their consciousness. As something that I personally hold very dear is that as our Krishna consciousness grows and as the next generation comes up following behind the physical presence of Prabhupada on this planet, that this understanding needs to be very carefully captured, because otherwise the default position will prevail, like other religions, without naming and so forth. Anyway, in America, the Christian religion may have started in a very high place, but it's not in a very high place right now. What happened over time is the secularizing. The Christian theologians themselves point to this. There's what you do for God and there's the rest of what you do. And that's, this verse is saying the opposite. The rest of what you do, being connected with God, is very important. And especially for intellectuals. I mean, that's what the verse is. Learned circles have positively concluded. Human intellect is developed for advancement of learning in art, science, philosophy, physics. By culture of such knowledge, the human society can attain perfection of life. So it's not spirituality doesn't poo-poo getting a good education. But if you get the good education and you missed the point of it, then you just got drawn in and to a materialistic way of life. And that's a great misfortune. The Bhagavatam is there to guide, to give light back into the society that is so misguided like that. In the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam, where the Vishnu Dutas are speaking to the Yamadutas. So the Yamadutas were asked, please describe the duties of a living being, because you're the agents of Yamaraj. He's the Lord of Dharma. He's Dharmaraj. So as his representatives, you need to know what he knows, because you're to administer his work. So what's the principles of Dharma that everyone should live by? What's deviation? What's our Dharma? And so forth. How you determine who is to be punished? Are all persons who are engaged in material activity to be punished? Simply because there's unavoidable mistakes, and therefore with the mistakes they're to be punished. They've asked some deep questions. After the Yamadutas give their answer, then the Vishnudutas speak, and they speak about this Paradharma principle, and Paradharma principle is included with this glorification of the Supreme Lord through choice verses of glorification or prayer. The chanting of the holy name of Lord Vishnu is the best process of atonement for a thief of gold or other valuables, etc., etc., etc. simply by chanting the holy name of Lord Vishnu, such simple persons may attract the attention of the Supreme Lord, who therefore considers, because this man has chanted my holy name, my duty is to give him protection. Then the following verse, so that's the context, this uttama shloka phrase comes in almost the same. Tad uttama shloka guno palam dakam. So the translation, by following the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies or undergoing atonement, sinful men do not become as purified as by chanting once the holy name of Lord Hari. Although ritualistic atonement may free one from sinful reactions, it does not awaken devotional service, unlike the chanting of the Lord's names, which reminds one of the Lord's fame, qualities, attributes, pastimes, and paraphernalia, which is the uttama shloka. Tat uttama shloka guno palam bakam. This upalamba kam, reminding one of the uttama shloka guna, the transcendental qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's a beginning, although it's not the conclusion. It's not sufficient just to chant Hare Krishna and go to work. But even that beginning, combined with regularly hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, followed by applying the message of the Bhagavatam, that is, the intelligence directing the mind, directing the senses, interacting with our contact with the world, the spiritual direction along with the purification of heart, again these two parallel tracks, will bring us gradually to the stage of connecting with the Personality of Godhead, even in the workplace, even in our practical affairs of life. So we say, chant Hare Krishna, be happy. But, you know, behind that little sutra statement, there's a principle. And while we're being happy in that purified state of consciousness, then naturally follows some practical questions. Well, how do I live the other part of my life besides when I'm chanting Hare Krishna and being happy? Okay, that's a good question. This verse instructs us how the finer features of human civilization, the finer faculties that one may be endowed with, and the paraphernalia that surrounds us, how to utilize those things in that same pure consciousness, glorification of the Personality of Godhead. In nice ways. Very nice ways. Use the abilities that you have. Cultivate those abilities. And it will help bring you to the stage of perfection of life. And of course the caution is there. And if you don't, this deepening of involvement in the material energy, that's very difficult to extract once you're deeply involved in it, becomes the consequence. And one becomes very attached and bewildered, and the purpose of life is lost. Even if you have a sense of what that deeper purpose of life is, if you don't act upon it, one gets drawn into the material energy. Just that's what happens. Okay. Tad uttama shloka guna nirvana nam. Prabhupada named one disciple Uttama Shloka and then another disciple Gunarnava. Das. Any discussion on this? God is all spiritual. Our real identity as spiritual is all spiritual. So one might argue or consider, if I want to be connected with God, what I need to do is just stop all activity. Because if I don't stop all activity, then I'm going to be involved in matter. What's that? Can't find his phone. Huh? So an impersonal or an incomplete sense of being spiritual is what many parents are concerned if their children get involved in Krishna consciousness is, they're going to become a sannyasi. They're not going to do their duties in life because they've got to be spiritual. So, a little bit's okay, but don't go too far because then you'll have to, stop all your duties. Don't have anything to do with matter because that's material. So that's a misconception. So what's the proper conception? What justifies being fully in spiritual consciousness while involved in all varieties of activities? It's the understanding of those energies having their inseparable connection to God. And because of that inseparable connection to God, they can be used in the service. Well, if that's the case, then we're all engaged in Krishna's, in God's service. But then there's the consciousness behind that he's distinct from those things at the same time. Only when they're properly used does that spiritual connection itself or it manifest. So there's the pantheistic and the impersonal conception, both of which are incomplete. Pantheistic sees the oneness. The impersonal sees they're distinct. There's Brahman and there's everything else that doesn't exist. So there is scriptural and thus you can say philosophical or theological validation behind engaging things, engaging this body, engaging the senses, engaging the energy through the senses in the service of the Supreme. So there's the philosophical justification or support. And what about the consciousness? We can have an a theoretical conceptual understanding, but then we need to have the purified state of consciousness. That's another thing. Like the Mayavadi sannyasis were criticizing Lord Chaitanya. Why are you carrying on like this? You're sannyasi. You're supposed to be sitting meditating and studying Vedanta, right? Singing and dancing and carrying on with worldly people. That's not
What is sannyasi supposed to do? On my wall in my office in New York, I have a picture of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur sitting in a convertible in Vrindavan, wearing a big coat. Sannyasis aren't supposed to wear coats. They're supposed to wear just only not some cloth. They're not supposed to ride in a vehicle. They're supposed to walk. Sitting straight. In Krishna's service, not for sense gratification. Just to make a point. Riding around the Goswamis, you know, waving to the Goswamis. And sending disciples across the ocean. Not supposed to do that. But the same renunciation on the basis of not using something nirbandha Krishna sambandha yuktam vairagya uchate, using things that have their sambandha, their relationship with Krishna. Hari sambandha vastuna vamukshavi kutyatam vairagyam palugu katyate. It's false renunciation to not see the relationship that things have with Krishna and then use them in his service. But that's what most of the people think that being spiritual means. You're a monk. People ask, you know, are you a monk? Does that mean you've renounced all worldly possessions? Why are you riding in the airplane? Why do you have a computer? What's the justification behind having a computer? Etc.
Maharaj, how to maintain and elevate consciousness at workplace?
Chant really good rounds and study Srimad Bhagavatam very carefully and have very strong spiritual relationships with all the devotees. When you're attached to someone, you will always be thinking of that someone because you're attached to that someone. You develop an attachment for Krishna. You'll carry that Krishna consciousness with you into the workplace. It certainly helps, aside from the sentiment of attachment, to have a few philosophical supports, understanding of things in relation to Krishna. Sambandha Gyan really helps. And then it's a matter of the cultivation of that understanding in practical application. Let's say, you know, somebody is getting very angry, and there you are in the middle trying to be Krishna conscious in your workplace. So you can then understand, from the position of knowledge, you can understand, oh, this is what tamogun is. This is one of Krishna's energies, tamogun. And someone is lusty. Oh, that is rajagun. Someone is controlling. That's another type of rajagun. So, detachment from knowledge. Being situated, it's a neutral place, it's not a devotional place. Detachment, jnana vairagya, that couplet always appears in spiritual teachings. So through knowledge you can be detached. And through attachment to Krishna, then you can stay in the spiritual world, in the Krishna realm. Even surrounding you is all this other body display of material energy. And sometimes it may seem attractive, sometimes it may seem repulsive, sometimes it may seem neutral. It's just a display of the material energy. And you can stay fixed in that consciousness, which was your question, when you're attached to Krishna. And otherwise, it's a battle. That's the battlefield is the mind. So we have to go beyond mentally accepting Krishna consciousness. We have to go to the spiritual dimension and become attached to Krishna. So that's the practical application phase that I was speaking about at the beginning. Just keep practicing. Practice off the playing field of the workplace to be Krishna conscious. And when you walk into the workplace, you count to 10 and you pray to Krishna, please keep me. Please stay in my mind. Cultivate your relationship with Krishna. The gradual purification that comes from doing that off the playing field and in the playing field, in your home and in the workplace, the gradual purity and the direction that Krishna will supply you, Krishna will supply intelligence as you practically move along, and you're willing to accept that intelligence that Krishna gives, then you can fly your way through the workplace and be Krishna conscious. It's a gradual thing. Gradual unfolding, awakening of Krishna consciousness in all circumstances of life. Wait till marriage comes, and it's a whole other thing. And then children, it's a whole other thing. There's many challenges down the road. Not just the workplace, though. But the same principle. You do what you do for Krishna, and with attachment for Krishna.
Within the realm of service to Krishna, sometimes I find, most of the times I have a certain expectation of how the service should be done and how I want it to be done. And
that's good.
But then
it's
a whole different thing when I'm working in a group or when I'm working with my husband and I'm working with people who have other ways of doing things, and sometimes I'm confused about where should I be attached to how the results, like how well it's done, is that important, or is it the cooperation and I know it's a balance of the two and it's both, but how to really do that, especially when I'm working alone it's much easier, but when I'm working with a group of devotees, it's sometimes I find myself getting upset and whether things are not being done this way, or and sometimes I'm right, sometimes I'm not, but how to kind of
I'll give a short answer and then try to expand on it. Prabhupada said Krishna consciousness is based on love and trust, give and take. That's a short answer. So the balance is sometimes this and sometimes that. So in certain circumstances, just like, you know, when you make it a little bit easier because their egos are generally a little more pliable working with children, there are certain things that you would like to do with the children and like to see them doing, and they may have another idea, and some things is fine. Another idea is fine. But there's some things that just, you know, you're not going to permit this other thing. You draw the line. And there's some areas that are a little bit in between. You want them to learn a principle, and so you're a little patient while they're learning their principle. So the fabric of that is love. But what's behind the being flexible, being patient, and being firm, it's a loving disposition toward the other person. And that, so sometimes I may have a wish that certain things are done in a certain way, but out of respect for that other individual and valuing the relationship, I'll just drop it. but sometimes. And when the relationship is coming out of love, when that firmness does come, my mind is going to a situation that I'm dealing with. It's exactly on this topic. Very exasperating situation. Bending over backwards to accommodate, and it's not. So then at a certain point, it's going to take just getting really burnt. Because it's a principle, and it's a very important principle, and there are multiple persons involved in helping to bring the understanding of the principle. And if the person just refuses, then, so the thing for you to check, for each of us to check, is where are we coming from? Are we coming from control, or are we coming from mode of service? In that mode of service, the fabric of that service is a loving service. And in some cases where there's loving service, firmness is required. So we can be flexible. We have to have a plan. But we also have to be ready for Krishna's plan.
Especially with when I'm working with superiors, maybe my husband, is it okay to kind of, in a mode of service, to let go and...
Sure. Sure.
Even though it may not be...
Even though it may not. Exactly. Even your intelligence may say, no. If you're headed for a cliff and your husband doesn't see it, you may want to be firm. But that if the mood is a loving mood, and the principle of the loving mood is prevailing, then that will be a certain signal. Then you have to be discriminating when that firmness is there. But that's, very, very sparing, because the dynamic of wife dealing with husband is the husband will want to hear, and the husband will then make a decision. And as you've expressed on a number of occasions, over a period of time, you come to understand the wisdom. Maybe not immediately, but over time. And that's more important than the immediate circumstances, the fabric of the relationship. Because over time, supposing there is a particular decision or instruction that later on your husband finds it wasn't the right decision, let him learn that way rather than the other way. And then in the end, the deeper value of that relationship and respect for the words that the wife says to the husband have another dimension to it. And even that's less important than the relationship. And, in the husband-wife dynamic, there's plenty of opportunity through familiarity to have tension and all of those things. And being in the wife's position, it's, I kind of always be the subordinate position. But, there are plenty of opportunities, there are plenty of opportunities for giving leadership, and the best leader is the one who's the best follower. Leadership with the children in the family, leadership with other people, and so it's the critical relationships that one has determine the nature of the community, the well-being of the community. It starts at home. The charity starts at home. Being a good community member, civic all of my other duties in the principal relationships that I have. Right there. Like, you know, saying the same thing in another way. Prabhupada initially taught Krishna consciousness from the kitchen. That's the consciousness of controlling the tongue. Not tasting, not talking, staying clean, being respectful. This is for Krishna, you know, everything. Just in that one act of cooking. And consciousness, he taught us, is invested or transmitted through the act of cooking. Everybody has to eat. And it's for Krishna. So, in those little actions determine so much of the rest of one's Krishna consciousness in the workplace or with friends and the critical everyday things, the consciousness that we carry, very important. Otherwise we have this high philosophy and something else in real life. But the everyday real life dynamic must be replaced. Anything else?
Thank you. Guru Maharaj, something that is very difficult for me is when a near and dear one is repeatedly, like, you know, seems to be heading for the cliff, it's really hard to stay quiet. How do I detach myself and let go and let the person learn the lesson in the heart? Because there's love and care, and even though it's coming out of that place, the other person doesn't get it.
This is one of the challenges of life. Like, you know, the question of how to be Krishna conscious in the workplace. It's easy to sit and say it, and then there's the reality. Just take that one. You know, you've been in different work environments, and being Krishna conscious in certain work environments make it really hard. And the answer, I'm thinking of my own service as a spiritual master with disciples who are very near and dear to me, and they may be going in a direction that's, you know, that thinking of your question in a different application. And I can't control their decisions, their free will choices. I can, as the best that I can do is provide an atmosphere that's very healthy and supportive of making the right decisions. Now, I can exercise the option from my position of giving an instruction. I can, you know, exercise the guru, disciple, card. But that's not necessary when you make the difference either. It's did it be the individual choice of the individual to move to the position of well-being. So that in my case, the dynamic is different, and in the case of a woman within society, whatever the various relationships may be, there's a certain social position and expectation of what that role is, and act in a spiritually empowered role where all the spiritual assets and the caring and nurturing, and you know, you do your part, and that other resources are brought to bear to help make the wisdom do its magic. It's not just a matter of stepping back and letting you know, the person learn the hard way. I mean, you're aware of certain dynamics where I was guiding certain persons that were making, you know, very, very foolish choices. The very person is very near and very dear. You can't stop that if that's happening. But in certain cases, you know, so those principles, you can't help another person unless there's a loving relationship. They'll take it or leave it at their own discretion unless there's a very strong loving relationship. And when that's genuinely there, then that's a resource that that person can draw upon when they're ready to draw upon it. So it's not a matter of just stepping back and doing the Lord the Hell. And involved in that process may be some strongly placed words. Dura, strongly placed words. But lovingly expressed. And they were accepted because it was known, A, this person is wise, and or maybe B, the person is wise, and A, the person knows me and really cares. But then maintaining a supportive role. Regardless. That's difficult to do when one has one's own needs and sense of need. Just speaking these things is easy, and doing these things is another thing. Ultimately, it's our faith in the Krishna factor that Krishna will adjust over a period of time. If there's some things aren't moving in the way that we would like or at the speed that we would like, that's the outcome, a little bit like Nanda Vrindavan's question. Not just the way a certain thing is going, but also the outcome of that thing. It's not in our hands. Our duty, our responsibility to Krishna is to be his representative, his loving instrument, his loving servant and his instrument. And we need to trust that Krishna will exert his mercy and benevolent influence. Thank you. anything else. Yeah.
Real realization and detachment leads to sannyasi. Is it right? I have a feeling that acquiring a sense in the name of Krishna or involving in the all the material activities, even though we remember the God all the time while doing the activities, still we have the desire to do some things. That's why we are doing it. Yeah, means it. We are playing safely. If we came into a real realization, definitely we go to, we leave all these things and we go to our sentence, right? Can you comment on
it? Yes, I can comment on it. Prabhupada used this phrase. This is a large topic, but I'll try to keep it small. 16. Prabhupada used the phrase grihastha sannyas.
Mm-hmm.
Not only in terms of begetting children, but meaning only for the purpose of procreation, having sex only for that purpose, and such principle Prabhupada called grihastha sannyas. And that's our Krishna conscious standard, that's our principle that we have been given by our acharyas. Here's the standard. But in other matters also. So like this, referring back to the Jiva Dharma dialogue, this young man was wanting, he was ready to be in the ashram with the sannyasis. Their advice to him was to enter into household life and live your life responsibly. So there's this, if one has, try to do it. Narada Muni gave a different instruction to the 10,000 and 1,000 sons of Daksha, because he saw they had the qualification to just bypass that whole experience and just remain detached. But so one may have an understanding. I'll take this middle position. There's the attached and there's the unattached. There's the I understand, but I have some attachment position. Now what to do? There's where it gets finer. Discernment is necessary, but generally, as long as there's such a, the way the Prabhupada described is, one who takes sannyas should have no material desire, because otherwise it's pretense. I'm in this position, but I'm hankering for that position. Or another way, Prabhupada said the same thing. When a sannyasi, by duty, visits the home of a householder, he should not be thinking, maybe I'm missing out on something. All these nice things. Nice this, nice that. But that thought should not enter the mind or the heart of a sannyasi. Then Prabhupada said, one should not have such desires, or at least the strength of intelligence that no. But better, there is no such desire. There is no such desire. That's sannyas. And where there is such desire, better to purify, better to undergo the procedures that are scripturally recommended to purify oneself of those desires. Not like burn out on the desires, or you know, get beaten up so badly, that was a bad desire. But then still the desire may be there. Because lots of people are getting beaten up, but they're not getting that realization. It's purification that's required. So there's prescribed means of purification. The prescribed means of purification is utilizing something. Utilizing the ashram. utilizing one's home, utilizing one's wealth, utilizing one's position within society, utilizing, and through utilizing, becoming purified, becoming spiritualized. And then when one is spiritualized, one can step from that position without any regret, without any lingering disposition of enjoyment.
So at this point it is not a renunciation.
It's not?
Renunciation.
At which point?
No.
At the point of having desires and walking away from them. It's not that you're, one is missing.
Replacing the grasp position as in order to purify these things.
That's not. Once one has taken that decision, and one has entered into grihastha life, in a religious, an ideal religious sense, one should fulfill those duties. One should not abandon those duties and leave people dependent who entered into an arrangement with that individual, and now they've. And that has happened, and that's not so good. Now there are exceptions to that. In scriptures, there Ramanujacharya did that.
Largely.
Yeah. So there are examples of elevated personalities who did such things. And in an early stage of life, Bharat Maharaj did that. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did that. But it wasn't that there was care and protection. There was a higher purpose. It wasn't let me get out of this. I want to perform exclusive service to the Supreme Lord. Like in Ramanuja's case, his wife was offensive. She was offending elevated Vaishnavas, and he warned her. And she couldn't, you know, so he placed her in the care of her father and took sannyas. So there are circumstances, but that's not where in the case with Ramanujacharya, that he was like, you know, struggling with his material desire and then just broke out of his material desire and went for it. Or Mahaprabhu. I don't know the details of Buddha's life, but we'll assume that it wasn't out of sense gratification in principle that he took up that position. And in our case, it's a different, generally, different set of circumstances. Now, and in Prabhupada's preaching and expanding the Krishna consciousness movement, he took really big risks for the purpose of increasing the number of preachers. Young men in their 20s, he gave sannyas, with coming, you know, crawling out of the pit of, you know, America. And not all those sannyasis. But it was for a purpose. It was for dynamic studying at a time when he had little, few breaths left in his life to establish something very dynamic. And at least in our society, following that, we've understood we need to be much more cautious and conservative in this matter for a lot of reasons, many reasons. And so my answer is couched in that frame. For the respectability of the household or ashram, grihastha ashram, and for the protection of the grihastha ashram, persons who enter in grihastha ashram should complete their grihastha duties before leaving the grihastha ashram. And should one not enter the grihastha ashram, a careful evaluation of one's desires. Can one enter into the sannyasa ashram if that's someone's desire, and they, as you put it in the question, they understand, then that that understanding should be fortified by the capacity to fulfill what they understand with careful evaluation. Generally, within our ISKCON, within our system in ISKCON, is before sannyas is awarded, there's a whole series of screens and filters one has to pass through, and a long standing in line, observing the behavior. And there are exceptions, but they're very carefully considered because it's a very exception. So, does that help the answer? 8 o'clock. I think it's a nice time to end.
Yeah.